This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Boost Academy, Ron's Electric Motors, Bank of the Bahamas, Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Progressive Liberal Party, and Wendy's.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name's Juan McCartney, so good to have you with us. We got several things to deal with today. I'm going to warn you, I guess it doesn't matter, but I'm tired again. And it's also 14 degrees Fahrenheit in this studio, which doesn't help. I just been waking up, or I'm getting older. I just been waking up earlier. I don't know. I don't want to. I haven't been going to bed any earlier. Like, I try to be in bed by 10:30, 11, you know, the latest. And now I've been waking up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. Or if I'm not totally awake, I'm like, you ever been in this like pseudo dream state where you're aware of what's actually, that you're not fully asleep, but you're still like dreaming, and you know what I mean? It's not restful at all. But you're just laying there. I need hard drugs or something. I don't know. All right. We are today broadcasting as they lay to rest the Honorable Arthur Dion Hanna, former Deputy Prime Minister, former Minister of Education, former Minister of Finance. We are burying a giant today. Coincidentally, today is the, or maybe not coincidentally, I don't know if they planned it, today is the 21st anniversary of the death of Sir Lyndon Pinling. So today we're reminded about two giants of men who have left us. All right. I'm going through menopause and brain. I don't know what it is. I should wake up 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to be up. Because my kids get up with the sun. So, and once that party starts, it don't end till about 8:30 in the night. I want to get into this thing with the union and the PLP, but first I'm going to talk about this latest thing that the PLP has sent out, or Chester Cooper has sent out, about the pre-election update. And you know, I had forgotten that this was a thing, but it is actually a thing. Let me read what Cooper has to say. He says, let me find it. Okay, a statement on breach of pre-election fiscal update law, Chester Cooper, PLP, Deputy Leader and Shadow Finance Minister, August 26. In the early days of the Minnis administration, when it still operated under the pretense of wanting fiscal transparency, the Fiscal Responsibility Act was passed. Included in that act is the requirement to report the state of government fiscal affairs prior to a general election. Section 11.1 of the act states, the minister shall, not earlier than 30 working days, nor later than 20 working days, before the day appointed as polling day in relation to any general election of members of parliament, arranged to be published on an official website of the government, a pre-election economic and fiscal update, which shall include the information specified in the third schedule. I pulled up the law, so we're going to go through the third schedule. And in fact, the act states more than this, that Cooper had said. Cooper says, there are 15 working days left before polling day, including today. Let's check that. Thursday, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yeah, he's right. Because election day, of course, is not a working day. Is it a working day? I guess election day is a working day. You just got to do it before election. But anyway, the 20 days are over for certain. You're past the 20-day mark. He's right. It says, the Minnesota administration is yet again in breach of the law. For the record, the pre-election and fiscal update is required by law to include government revenue and expenditure outturn for the current year, approval of new spending since the annual budget, including contracts and service projects and policies, and the outstanding stock of arrears for all government entities, including showing separately all new unpaid invoices since the stock of arrears was last reported, among many other critical things. There are many other things that the Act points out. I'll go through some of them briefly. We call on the Minnis administration to come into compliance with the law and publish the pre-election and fiscal update so the Bahamian people can be clear on how their tax dollars are being spent. Meantime, we still await the report from the Fiscal Responsibility Council and the legally mandated report on vendors who receive pandemic funds. This government has broken so many promises to the people, but perhaps none bigger than the promise to be transparent and accountable. Instead, they have routinely violated their own laws to avoid sharing the details of how they are spending the money they have borrowed in the people's name. All right. Well, Cooper's putting his political spin on it, but he is right. He's right. They're in violation of the Fiscal Responsibility Act. Let's read. As he said, Section 11. Pre-election. Before I do that, let me do this. Let's Google. Bahamas pre-election economic and fiscal update. Okay, so no. That's not published on any website that I can see. There's a lot of stories about there being these new rules and the government talking about it, but it's not published anywhere I can see. Okay, so let's go to the Act. Since we know it's not there and they're in breach, let's go to the Act and see what we're missing out on. This says, the minister, 11, pre-election economic and fiscal update. One, the minister shall. Okay. Not earlier than 30 working days. Not the minister can, the minister may, the minister shall. Not earlier than 30 working days. No later than 20 working days before the day appointed as polling day in relation to any general election of members of parliament, arranged to be published on an official website of the government, a pre-election economic and fiscal update, which shall include the information specified in the third schedule. Two, the minister shall ensure that the pre-election economic and fiscal update is a technical and objective update. Three, following two general elections after the commencement of this act, the minister shall commission an independent review to consider A, the effectiveness of the pre-election economic and fiscal update in contributing to compliance with the fiscal responsibility requirements of this act by the government, and B, whether additional requirements to increase transparency about fiscal responsibility with regard to a general election may be beneficial to propose for inclusion in the law. Four, the minister shall, ensure that the independent review shall be a technical and objective review. 5, the Prime Minister shall present the independent review to Parliament no later than 6 months after the second general election of a government following the commencement of this act. Second general election. So not this next one, but the one after that. They do the review. Okay, let's go to the third schedule. Well, before we do that, let's go to breach of fiscal responsibility principles or fiscal objectives. And I went through this, and there is nothing in here that speaks to any breach of the third schedule. So I'm trying to figure out, why would you have a law saying that they have to do something, but then don't have any penalty? I guess, you know, you want to be in the government has to be in compliance with the law, period. Even without penalty, like that ain't, what do you say, the minister got to pay a fine to itself, to the government, donate to charity. So there's no penalty, but I could understand that. They just need to be in compliance with the law. I wonder why they didn't do this. Third schedule, contents of a pre-election update report. The pre-election update report shall contain updated macroeconomic forecasts and assumptions from the fiscal strategy report or mid-year review, whichever is the most recent. Updated fiscal information, including government revenue outturn and forecast for the current year and next 3 years. Government expenditure outturn and forecast for the current year and next 3 years, including for expenditure, primary expenditure, and expenditure on wages and related personnel costs. That'd be good to know. Approval. Actually, we already know. The next 2 years. We know for the current year, and I believe the budget speaks to the next 2 years. Maybe three. I could be incorrect. I'll check. Approval of new spending since the annual budget, including contracts and service projects and policies. Now that you want to know, because that tells you like what didn't you go through Parliament to approve that you did, that you spent since July 1. Fiscal balance forecast for the current year, fiscal balance forecast for past 2 years, and forecast next 3 years. Net and gross debt for the current year and next 3 years. Level of guarantees, that's important. Tax relief, remissions, and other waivers. The outstanding stock of arrears for all government entities, including showing separately all new unpaid invoices since the stock of arrears was last reported. That's actually very important. Because what that would tell you is, what is government now paying for or has committed to pay for that we didn't see since the last budget? This says, 9, other significant financing matters that have occurred or are planned. C, there's a lot going on in the third schedule here. C, an update of the fiscal risk position compared to the fiscal strategy report and the annual budget. That'd be good to know. A statement of responsibility signed by the minister that the pre-election economic and fiscal update includes A, or 1, all policy decisions with material, economic, or fiscal implications that the government has made before the day on which the contents of the pre-election economic and fiscal update was finalized, and 2, all other circumstances with material, economic, or fiscal implications of which the minister was aware before that day. Jesus, that's broad, eh? C, a statement of responsibility signed by the financial secretary that the pre-election economic and fiscal update has been prepared by the ministry, 1, using its best professional judgments, and 2, on the basis of economic and fiscal information available to it before the week on which the contents of the pre-election economic and fiscal update was finalized, and H, a statement of the accounting and other standards applied, which shall be the accounting standards adopted for the government consistent with internationally accepted standards, and where such standards are not used, and an explanation of the deviation shall be provided. Yeah, that's a lot. You guys got a lot going on. It says, what's the penalty for not complying with producing an annual education report? Who do you punish if the breach belongs to the government? I agree. I do understand the logic. So you don't say, Well, if there's a breach, there's a punishment per se. Although you have many laws that do, but if the Fiscal Responsibility Act says the Minister of Finance must do it, then he must do it. He must be in compliance with the law. That's just what it is. The government has to be in compliance with the law. Should be in compliance with the law. All right. So Cooper's right. I wait to hear from the Ministry of Finance on this front. That's very interesting because this was a major thing. Even though I forgot about it, this was a major thing that they talked about in order to prevent misfeasance in the run-up to a general election. So I'm interested as to where that is. Okay? Let me go through some of your text messages, and then we're going to talk about the union thing. Also, after the 1 o'clock break, we'll be talking with Maxine Seymour, the Free National Movement candidate for Seabreeze. It says, you're going to bed too early. You need to go to bed at 11:30 or so. Well, it depends. However many hours of sleep you need to go to bed that much time before. I could live, right, comfortably off 6 to 7 hours of good sleep. I could live comfortably with that. Not five. Hey, Juan, you're waking up early because you're subconsciously excited that elections are near. Maybe. I mean, I'm not waking up and going, something on my mind. Enough of them can't sleep at night. Them all worry on friend. Says the better shape you're in, the less sleep you need. Okay. Says looks like Carl Kulmer was probably right about the unions. I don't know what he said by the unions, but I'm gonna talk about them in just a moment. Great show as usual. Two suggestions to go back to sleep if you wake up 4 a.m. Option one, wake up the wife. Or option two, watch porn. Okay. I don't want to do either of those things at 4 o'clock in the morning. My wife's not a pleasant, abrupt waker upper. It says, okay, they've broken the law. What next? That's it. You just let it ride. That's it. They broke a law. All right. Such is life. Be in compliance with the law. All right. It says, Juan Chester's such a joker because if he gets in, he will never follow this law because it will conflict with them getting theirs. Then if you question him, he'll just ignore you. I am 54 and have never voted, and it's because of these clowns always calling each other out but always doing the same thing. Well, I'm voting. You should vote. A lot of people, including A.D. Hanna, who we're burying today, and Sir Lyndon, whose death happened 21 years ago today, fought very hard for you to have the right to vote. And so I'm going to honor that and utilize my vote. And the guy won't call me names because I say I don't care who wins the government. I don't care who wins the government. I'm going to go vote for my parliamentary representative, because you're not actually going to go vote for a government. You think that in your head, but that's not in your individual control. You have to have like-mindedness. Also, tomorrow is nomination day, right? And you know what happens nomination day is they have to submit their financial declarations. Now, we have no earthly idea for at least, I think, 8 years now, 7 years, perhaps eight. I'd have to check. We have no idea what the financial disclosures of members of parliament, permanent secretaries, senators, all this stuff, what they contain, because we have not published a gazette containing them. And the public disclosure chairman, who probably would have had to resign according to the outdated general orders, is Miles LaRota, or was up to the point of receiving a nomination, Miles LaRota, who is the PLP's candidate for Pinewood? No, who's Pinewood? I think he's Pinewood. Yeah, Miles LaRota. I think so. He's the PLP's candidate. Someone, let me say this. I hope in the case that Miles LaRota is elected to parliament, or if the PLP wins and he's appointed to something, that he does a better job at that than he's done at disclosing financial declarations of MPs and senators. I don't really care about the PSs. I do, but you know. And I hope they're sending him to me and I can ask him why he hasn't been doing that job as it should be done. He keeps giving people extensions and all this other stuff. Meantime, MPs are telling me I filed. I can't see it. It's required every year. He could call me if you're out there listening, call me and maybe you can explain to the public why that hasn't happened. Anyway, we'll find out. So we'll find out who's got what or who say they got what. Because they're going to have to publish those, gazette those. The Parliamentary Registration Department will publish all those and we'll see. Who do you think is going to be the richest one this year? Last one was Brent Simonet, but ain't nobody close to that type action. That was $156 million. Who would be the richest one? D'Aguilar, eh? Probably, but you never know. You never know. Some of these people who nominate me, you don't know. Maybe Cooper? One, please remind everyone who the current Minister of Finance is. I think a good fine for a breach is $30,000 a day of personal money, not government money. That can offset the money taxpayers are paying daily on the Grand Lucayan, just sitting there. Okay. Now, fine. I mean, this is the Minister of Finance, right? But he's got a massive staff at the Ministry of Finance and the Office of the Prime Minister. It can be on him, or it is on him, I'm sorry, but I find it strange that he's got a huge staff and nobody's working on this and saying, Prime Minister, here you go. So I'm interested as to what's going on with that, but I'm not going to just say Minis should have been thinking about it. Although ultimately, it's on the minister because they call him the minister name. It says, we have such beautiful legislation in what the minister shall do, but we rarely hear what happens if the minister shall not. Other than that, we have lively legislation subject to the voluntary compliance of government. It says, the richest will be between Chester, D'Aguilar, Davis, and Minis. What was D'Aguilar and Davis last time? Minis was like 12 million, something like that. And y'all be out here crying for him like, oh, poor. He's straight. It says, it's not better shape, less sleep. Sleep is vital for health, especially building muscle. Yeah, exactly. Good day one. There's no way the government is doing that. That sounds like work. Says, why call an election when so many Bahamians are dying due to COVID-19? This government doesn't have the interest of Bahamians. They will surely lose this election. We'll see. We shall see. It says, well, I don't want to say that. Chester is an insurance boss. If they get in, insurance places will have a field day raising insurance prices with one of them. One of their own is DPF. You know they can't just do that, right? They got to deal with the insurance commission and things of this nature. Actually, do they have to submit their actuarial reviews to the insurance commission before they raise rates? That's a good question. I'm not sure. It says, I know what it contains. They got richer. It says, did you ever find out if Dr. Minis had a beneficial interest in Canoe? Not that I'm aware of, no. That type of contract award is completely counter to the Constitution. Too much of it happens. That's why these guys going with the tin can then end up owning empires within 5 years. The thing they're supposed to be cleaning up. Okay. It says, one of the next governments is going to have to implement a 15% corporate income tax program. The UN and other G7 countries have mandated this. I'd be somewhat surprised if it came in that says I'm all for this, it's about time. I'd be somewhat surprised if it came in at 15%. I'm thinking more like 10. We got a phone call? I'm going to talk about the union thing, don't worry. Good afternoon, welcome to the revolution.
Mr. McCartney.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm alive, and I'm glad to hear you alive.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. That $4 billion that they borrowed over 4 years, mm-hmm. What the deal is with that? The schools, what's going on? Where the money was spent?
They've said what they've done with the money.
Anytime you stumble, that means that you might be telling a lie.
Yeah, I mean, they've said what they've done with the money. So I haven't seen like the actual invoices, but they claim that about $2 billion of that was to refinance debt and pay off old debt. And $2 billion was additional borrowing to offset the fund, the budget, with the huge fiscal deficits. So that's what they tell me. So, all right. It says LaRota quit as commissioner in March when he started running for politics. Okay, all right. He still was way behind, I can tell you that. This says, that Juan, tell Chester the FNM will produce those documents that he is asking for after Brave tells the Bahamian people the details about BAMSI. SMT, FNM, and PLP need to go. I mean, it's the law. We got a phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Good afternoon, Juan. How you doing?
I'm good. How's it going?
I'm good, thanks, you know, Juan. You know, sometimes I just love to listen to the Yadian talk shows, but then sometimes it's like some of the talk shows where they're biased on the sleeve.
Okay.
You know, I mean, listening to this morning, one thing I can give the governing party, anytime the PLP does something, you have a million people that call in and critique every section of everything. With this MOU they signed, in which the government had an opportunity to sign with the unions as well. But before anything even comes to play, oh, it's just a promise that it ain't gonna happen. It's this, it's that, it's the next thing. How much things the FNM promised that didn't happen? I see them switch to the housing plans with so much people has now applied for 50 and 100. And I'm saying to myself, okay, you're talking about middle-class people and getting house. Out west, Abaco people even out their tent yet.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't.
And there seems to be no emphasis on getting people who are in a more distressed plight in a safe environment. But we're hyping up middle class people, and I have to say middle class people because if in this economic times you can afford to apply for a home of that size, then
yeah, that's reasonable.
Employed,
yeah.
And you're doing well.
That's reasonable.
You know.
Yeah.
Also, this morning too, they had them on one of the talk shows, the banks, and I'm wondering why the banks are continuously lending for cars. Who could buy any new car right now? Why is it that the banks can't offer some opportunity of some small loans of $50,000 for entrepreneurs to assist entrepreneurs in perhaps getting the business in which they can further themselves along?
They don't do that now.
These banks, they come and they offer you something which you can't even afford. They're not assisting in getting the Bahamian people further.
Okay.
And one last thing I wanted to comment on, the Arawak X.
Uh-huh.
You know, I watched them go around from talk show to talk show in the last couple of weeks, and it's amazing. And then they reveal who their first two businesses they're going to be raising funding for. And I'm saying to myself, well, poor people ain't going to benefit from this because, again, you are raising monies for companies that I think can be eligible through a regular banking system to get these funds.
Well, what so would you again, have them? What? Well, wait. What is your problem with it?
My thing is
because poor. You know, like, slow down. Think about what you're saying.
I'm thinking about what I'm saying.
You're saying that because poor people can't benefit from buying from funding new companies, that should not happen?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Okay. I'm saying, as it ruled out.
Because you realize the companies are going to hire minimum wage workers.
I understand that one, but get my point. My point is, I'm saying, there are some smaller businesses that thought this would be an opportunity for them to get their business up and running who can't qualify with the banks.
No, they can. They still can do that with ROIC-X. Yeah.
But just what I'm saying. But the emphasis, when you look at the rollout, it can almost be a discouragement because you see the first set of business they seem to be supporting is those that, me personally, I believe, can get that funding from a traditional bank because of the level of which they're at.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying, you know?
Fair enough.
Will there be an opportunity for smaller businesses, let's say someone with a $100,000 business, $150,000 business, who can't afford all the red tape and everything that the bank puts you through?
But I hear you, but you're totally ignoring the fact that the Small Business Development Center exists to do exactly that.
No, but I'm saying if you're saying now there's different opportunities for small businesses, one, do you understand what I'm saying?
If there
are more opportunities for small businesses, but then the first thing that's rolled out is businesses that you feel can go through to the traditional banks that has the resources to do that to get crowdfunding, then again, the smaller ones get pushed further back. That's all I'm saying. Will there be an emphasis besides the small business can only do so much because of government? If there are private enterprises that is coming forth to give Bahamians opportunities, I'm just figuring because they touted us as something that would assist in the development of more small businesses that are not being able to get the funding through the traditional banks.
Okay, I gotcha. I mean, we're going to disagree. I think that does exist exactly as you're stating it, with the Small Business Development Center, which was established to facilitate people who had issues getting traction with traditional commercial banks. So that's actually a thing. We got to take a break, but before we do, so just so you know, you've probably heard already, the Trade Union Congress and the National Congress of Trade Union Bahamas signed a memorandum of understanding with the PLP yesterday in order to have some sort of agreement as to what labor issues the PLP would focus on if they were to become the next government. Now, it's the TCU and the NCTU, both umbrella unions. However, today, affiliates of the National Congress of Trade Unions said that they do not support this move. This is from the Airport, Airline, and Allied Workers Union, the Bahamas Airline Pilots Association, the Bahamas Commercial Stores and Warehouse Union, the Bahamas Financial Services Union, the Bahamas Hotel, Catering, and Allied Workers Union, the Bahamas Musician and Entertainers Union, the Bahamas Public Services Union, Bahamas Union of Teachers, and the Union of Public Officers. Okay? These unions say we are disappointed that President Bernard Evans, who openly announced more than 2 months ago that he was quitting the labor movement without even informing the affiliates and is now making a mockery of the NCTUB. Evans did say he was quitting. We, the affiliates, have no confidence in President Bernard Evans, and for several months we've been asking him to resign, vacate the seat. This disingenuous action of a purported signing on our behalf is the straw that has broken the camel's back. This is in contravention of our Constitution, and we refuse to stand idly by and allow our members to be used as pawns. We would like to reassure the members of our various unions that we are committed to continue to serve you, and we're not involved in pushing anyone's personal agenda. We have never seen the document. We are not aware of the contents of the MOU, and it has not been tabled, discussed, or ratified by the NCTUB. Uh-oh. Trouble. Sound like trouble. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be back on the other side.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Many people wonder, what makes Boost Academy unique? Maybe it's our 8-to-1 student-staff ratio, the emphasis we place on student individuality, our focus on numeracy, literacy, and creating better citizens by sharpening students' critical thinking skills. One of our many talented teachers, program facilitators, and mentors. Or just maybe it is our commitment to taking full responsibility for your child's education, no hidden fees or costs. Regardless of what it is, let us help your child reach their full potential. Boost Academy is currently enrolling students of grades 4 through 12. Visit www.boostbahamas.com to apply now.
The PLP is hosting an economic summit where financial experts and business leaders share ideas and plans for transforming the Bahamian economy. Speakers will discuss the PLP's economic plan, a new blueprint to create a Bahamian economy that works for everyone. Discussions include opportunities in high tech, renewable energy, and training for entrepreneurs. Go to PLPEconomicSummit.com and learn how you can be part of a new Bahamian economy.
This has been a paid political announcement by the PLP.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
You've tried everything. ASUS, with your mother's cousin's sister's auntie, and even hiding your money under your mattress. But is your money safe? Your Bahamian dollar deposit in a member bank or credit union is insured up to $50,000. If anything happens, your deposit up to the insured value will be returned to you thanks to Deposit Insurance. Visit Deposit Insurance Corporation at www.dic.bf.
Protection for your money guaranteed with DIC.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to the Revolution here on Guardian Radio. So let's talk about this Memorandum of Understanding. So they signed a Memorandum of Understanding. I'll talk about what's in it, right? But the key takeaway is that they're supporting the PLP as the next government. The Trade Union Congress and the National Congress of Trade Unions, the two umbrella unions in this country. How do you, right, as a union leader, in today's environment, this ain't 1967, okay? As a union leader, in today's environment, or 68, in today's environment, how do you commit all these members to support the PLP? Are you not aware that thousands of FNM supporters are in these unions? How do you just fork them over to the PLP, who, by the way, ain't gonna do none of this, right? And I'll go through it. How do you do that? Aaron Evans was on Levin's show. I only heard the last segment. By the way, I see, I ain't trying to be shady, but, you know, I see Michael Pine and Dwayne Sands got ads on Levin's show. I hate him, you know. But how do you commit all your members to support a particular political party, to say 1967, you got to know that there's diverse political support among these unions. You should at least talk to them. These people say you didn't even talk to them. And in fact, I can have a problem with you if you're the president of the hotel union. If Darren Woods come and tell me, yeah, we going with the PLP, I'd be like, well, what you talking about? How you going to do that on my behalf? We got a call? Quickly. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Revolution. Did Evans, did Levin ask Evans about that? How do you commit everybody to support the PLP? Hello, sorry, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm great.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Juan, this is, to me, this is nothing new.
It's very new.
I'm open to the cable network and stuff. The United States, the unions over there, they do it publicly. John Pender as the public service union on many talk shows. Newest political persuasion. And he never hide that. So to me, it is nothing new.
But the
I understand what you're saying.
The unions ask their members.
New. And unions, like I said, United States, different all over the world, they openly. This is nothing new.
I agree that it's nothing
say,
new
how
for...
How can you? How can you? But like I said, even John Pender, as a public service union, never hid that. But I'm saying it is nothing new all over the world.
That's fine. They do it all over the world, you know.
No,
I don't,
but I'm
I don't
just
have a problem
saying,
with that.
It's nothing new.
No, this is new.
It is nothing
this
new.
This hasn't happened in 50 years.
It's nothing new. You're talking about 50 years, and you could go beyond 50 years in the United States with union. It's nothing new.
Okay. Well, you better tell that to the hotel union and the Bahamas Public Service Union, because it's new to them, and they say it's in violation of their constitution. I don't... know how you do that. All right? That's to me. Anyway, I mean, I don't understand that. How you just commit all these people to support a political party like that. I could see if the environment was different, like in 1967, you know what I'm saying? Or 68. But in today's political environment, you know there's diverse political support for these parties among maybe some people support the Coalition of Independence or the BDM or the DNA. It's astounding to me. Maybe it's just me. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. How's it going?
All right. Kirk Falkenwood. Hey. Long time.
Hey, how's it going?
I was trying to call Dwight Schrute this morning on the same thing that I missed. I didn't get it in time. But I have to come and speak to this. From the outset, let me say, I do not support no political party, because I don't believe in political parties. As far as I'm concerned, political parties have destroyed this country and got it the way it is today. Let me say that from outset, I don't know who moves. But does show desperation on part of the PLP on one hand, and this show how politicians have divided this country on the other hand, because we got the two umbrella unions that represent the people, the workers, are divided themselves. And that's what the political parties want. For a long time, they've been trying to tell where we find us in. And Doug Bennett was the president of the NCTU. They need to stop that because the politicians know the people are divided, so they get more left, right, and center. They have a part of this. So I've been talking all around and screaming and rolling in his grave.
Yeah, I'm just saying I don't understand how you don't speak to your members about it, at least.
That's what from now I would say that they're wrong for that. Especially if they go on and speak to the members.
I don't blame the PLP. If I'm the PLP, I'm gonna take any advantage I can get. And also if you read the language of this thing, the PLP has got out clauses language in this riddle throughout it.
Yes, and just as you said earlier, the environment in which we have just don't go. You have unions right over there representing the party. I never agree with that. Especially because the environment in which we have in this country, the political environment, the unionized environment, everything, whatever. I'm telling you, this is something that I really don't agree with. Because if the unions want to get together in the first instance, what should have done is we should come together as one union, one umbrella union for workers in this country, and stand against, not stand against the government, but can represent the workers of this country with the government. Because the government over the years know that the people are divided, and they will always be able to conquer. Political parties, it's conquer and divide.
Okay, my brother. I mean, I wouldn't agree with the statement that political parties have messed up the country. They've helped build the country. But that's just me. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's just me who's like taken aback that you would do that and don't talk to the affiliate unions and don't bring it before, like, that's a big move. Like, I know they do it. Like, wink, wink, nod, nod, who's supporting who? You know what I mean? Because you could tell, like, with Shane Gibson, John Pinder was president of BPA. You could kind of tell who was into who, you know? But the signed documents and all this is new. It ain't happened in my lifetime. I'll say that. We got time for a quick call? Got to be quick. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Not there? Okay, let's go to a break. We'll be back on the other side of the news. We're going to speak with Maxine Seymour, FNM candidate for Seabreeze. Stay tuned.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good-for-nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior's phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want to find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried it the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We are going to be now speaking with the Free National Movement candidate for Seabreeze, Maxine Seymour, who is in studio with me. Good afternoon, Maxine. Great to have you here.
Good afternoon, Juan. It's good to be here. And good afternoon, Seabreeze and Bahamas.
I'm gonna open like with an honest, pointed question for you. Like, as a young professional, up and coming, well, you're pretty established now, and you're a successful person. What would prompt you to get into public life at this time, particularly with this administration? Why would you put all that other stuff, your privacy, your ability to have your own life and guide your own future, and now you're affiliated with a particular party and you're branded that way? What made you do that?
Well, it's interesting you should ask, because you're right. It's much easier to continue with my professional life and to spare my family all of the, you know, humility and everything else that comes along with politics. But it seems to be the notion, or more widely popularized notion, that a good time to lead is when things are great, when the economy's up and healthcare is going well and everyone's happy and, you know, there's no major crisis or challenges going on, and you just have to kind of like, you know, muddle your way in and just lead, you know, like it's a breeze. But that's not the true mark of leadership. You know, really putting yourself forward when times are difficult, when you know that your country needs you most, when you believe that you have something to contribute at a time when ordinary people need to have a voice at the table, because ordinary people are the ones who are being most impacted by what's going on now. At a time when you're a part of an organization that you think can use more female influence in the leadership circle. And so I figured, if not now, then when?
It's very interesting because, you know, if the FNM wins and you're in parliament, there's pandemic going on, economic crises going on, health crises going on. So it's a challenging set of circumstances that you would find yourself in. But if you're up to the challenge, that makes sense to me, if you feel you're up to the challenge. Let me ask you this. You're coming into an area that was marked with a controversial exit for the last representative. And in fact, you were ratified just a few months ago. Have you found that has impacted your ability to campaign, or how people are responding to you, that you have to basically pick up where someone else left off, and someone who may not have been popular, or may, you don't know their relationships with these people? Has that impacted anything for you?
Well, I'll tell you, the thing about it is, for me and for you, is that we've both assumed roles in jobs, you know, where there was a predecessor. And so the reality is, you just kind of have to make an assessment, see what's in place, and then pivot from there, right? And then just make it all about where you're focused. You know, what do you bring to the table? What it is you want to do, and what it is you have to offer. And so I found that connecting with Seabreeze residents, you know, I've told them about me, and they have received me. And we're really looking forward to working together to build a better Seabreeze.
You are in one of, if I'm not mistaken, the only constituency where two women are running against each other. That's an interesting dynamic. Do you think that impacts the race at all, that there are two women to choose from? Or do you think that elevates the race, or it gives people sort of pause, maybe, that they don't have a male option? Are you finding anything going on with that?
Well, while I am exclusively focused on my own campaign, I have to say that I note that there are actually three women contesting the Seabreeze seat.
Oh, okay. Who's the third one?
So that depends on who's the second one.
No. Okay. Right.
So there are three women that are contesting the seat in Seabreeze. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for Seabreeze to ensure that our country has female representation in parliament. And so I look forward to representing Seabreeze.
Absolutely. So tell us a bit about Seabreeze. What are you finding? What are your plans? What are some of your goals and objectives for the constituency?
Seabreeze is a thriving community of persons who are really committed to traditional values. They're committed to, you know, top work ethics. They strive to and push to make sure that their children excel beyond what they would have in their lifetime. You know, many of them own their own homes, which they've had and maintained for years. You know, they work hard on different jobs in different sectors, and they're really committed to our country overall. They want to see our economy booming. You know, they want to know that healthcare and access to healthcare, quality healthcare, is something that's a priority for this government or any government. They are committed to business, and the entrepreneurial spirit is really high in Seabreeze. And neighborhood safety, all of that. I'll tell you that when I went into Seabreeze, it would have been easy for me to just kind of like, I don't know, do some printout of something, photocopy it, give it to everybody and say, these are my plans. But I was determined to first listen to the residents in Seabreeze and hear what concerned them. I wanted to understand from them what they wanted, because unless it mattered to them, it couldn't possibly matter to me as an incoming, you know, candidate who wanted to represent them. And so I've been having those conversations with them, and, you know, there have been some interesting findings, and we are committed to working together to really help make Seabreeze better.
Yeah, I grew up in Seabreeze, and I got to say that a lot of what you say is true. However, I found that as the years have progressed, Seabreeze has gotten the brunt of a lot of concerns. Maybe not that some of the inner city communities have, but crime has increased. All right, you got derelict vehicles and houses have increased. It looks very different from when I was growing up in the 90s in Seabreeze. And I'm trying to figure out how one restores, not that it's all being touched by that, but how does one restore what it once was?
So Seabreeze, like you said, has evolved over the years. And interesting, you said you grew up there because many of my classmates grew up there. Their parents still live there. And, you know, those are some of the people I'm committed to in Seabreeze.
You're saying,
I'll tell
right?
you, pardon?
You
yes, I did yeah, go right. to St. Anne's. Yes, I did.
Blue Waves, go Blue Waves. I went to St.
Go Blue Waves. And right. So the thing about it is you mentioned the derelict vehicle. Just two nights ago, I walked through a corner. It is so disturbing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's literally a crane operator who lives on the corner, who uses an empty lot that's overgrown to dump vehicles. And these vehicles are piled high. I'm talking in the air,
wow.
Like 12 feet in the air, and they're everywhere. You know, and I spoke to a resident about that, and that's completely unacceptable. You know, that's something. And in fact, I spoke yesterday to Minister Ferreira about the same thing. I was so frustrated. I told him, I was like, do you know what it is that these people have to live with? And like, we have to get this fixed. Because like you said, derelict vehicle crimes. Crime is a major challenge in Seabreeze, especially for certain neighborhoods and certain pockets. They find themselves constantly targeted. In fact, I spoke to a set of residents who live on a strip of, you know, apartments who said each year they have somebody who comes back annually and just literally takes what they want. And these are people who, like I started out saying, they worked hard, they earned the money, they didn't get it free or easy, and they buy stuff. And so we've been talking about how we work to help restore the Seabreeze that was in the 90s. You know, and so there are two functioning, for example, neighborhood watch, crime watch associations in Seabreeze. And so we've been talking about, okay, how do we duplicate those best practices in other neighborhoods across the community? You know, how do we ensure that, and I had a conversation with the Minister of National Security as well about how we ramp up police patrol in the area, how we increase, you know, response time. And so even in terms of, you know, disaster preparedness and emergency planning, you know, these are all things, streetlights, working with BPL, working with the Ministry of Works. I've been really working hard listening to Seabreeze residents and then figuring out how we solve these challenges, because they can be solved. You know, they're not beyond reach. They just need to be addressed by someone who is committed to addressing them.
Absolutely. Now, the question I also have is, you are selling Maxine Seymour, but at the same time, you got to sell the Free National Movement. So how do you sell the Free National Movement after people's dissatisfaction with what with the slow pace of recovery after Dorian, even though that's not impacting them in Seabreeze, they still have a national concern. How do you address their concerns about the economy and what the government is doing to bolster the economy and make their lives better?
Well, the thing about it is that we're a very small population and we're a very young country. And so everything that happens anywhere in our country affects us all. You know, because, you know, you mentioned Dorian, for example. I've met persons who, because they were displaced, they now live in Seabreeze. Mm. And so that means that Seabreeze now has, you know, new neighbors and friends from Abaco, from Grand Bahama. And so everything that happens in our country affects us all. And many things have happened in recent times because, I mean, you know, you take the first 2 years of the Minister's administration and there were upward trends, things were going well economically and otherwise, and then just hit, like, you know, it, like, right. you know, two major storms, one that the likes of which we've not seen, like, I don't even know in which history. I can't say how long, but it's been very long. And then there's a pandemic that no one could have prepared for. And so the reality is that the government managed to accomplish a lot of which it set out to accomplish, but there's more to be done, and there's more that we can accomplish with continuity of government in another term. And so, you know, I look forward to being a part of that new administration.
Yeah, you talk about continuity of government, and you make a great point, because I think that that's possibly one of the things that has hampered our rapid growth. You, of course, do not want an administration that is not performing well to continue on performing at the same level. But at the same time, we have not in the past 24 years given anyone room to breathe to actually fulfill or carry out their mandate. Now, you could say that's their fault because they didn't do it fast enough, but 5 years is difficult to do, to pivot a nation within 5 years. So if we're looking at the FNM in terms of let's continue to have the mandate to finish out what we're doing, what is that? What is the FNM plan to do? Because I haven't seen your plan because your site doesn't have it yet, or the site's under construction. So what is the FNM planning on doing?
Well, like I said, the plans that the FNM government was elected on in 2017 are still the plans that we are committed to, because there was a disruption. Many of those plans were accomplished. But the reality is that there's still more to do. Now, I'll tell you that Dr. Minnis is very committed to the Bahamian dream. And he's huge on, you know, us realizing what the true definition of commonwealth is. And so his thing is that as a commonwealth, we have to share the wealth. And so some of what the FNM is committed to is to ensuring that as Bahamians, we're able to aspire to own homes, we're able to find meaningful employment or manage successful businesses, that we're able to have access to quality healthcare. And this is where we started, and this is where we continue in spite of the disruption. And so I would say that that is our commitment, and that is why you would have seen home developments opened and ground broken. You would see, Crown land being, you know, reassigned on many of the family islands. You would have seen projects in terms of education, for example. That's very important because, you know, Dr. Minnis himself knows what it is in 10th grade to have to decide between finishing school and working to help care for the family. And so free tertiary education. In this country, you can be educated from toddler straight through to adulthood without paying for it. And, you know, we keep talking about our educational system, which I'm not an expert, but I would say, and I'm sure that you may have personal experience on it as well, that you cannot discount that early learning phase.
Absolutely.
And so now what this government has done is ensured that there's universal preschool education access to it. And so persons can go and they can take their children to school from young ages. You know, I met a first grade teacher. In fact, I'll tell you about two teachers I met in Seabreeze. One was a first grade teacher in Celinda Pinling Estates, who told me that children come to her in first grade not being able to recognize letters or numbers.
Wow.
And my daughter isn't in first grade, but she's reading fluently. Like, you know, the list goes on, and I'm sure you can attest. And so the reality is that that's unacceptable, because then you put them in first grade, they're trying to catch up, and then they get all the way to 12th grade, and they're trying to perform, but it's difficult now. And so that, for example, is something that the government has done, because the government values the commonwealth, which is also intellectual wealth, you know. And so even with the tertiary education, same thing, access to the University of the Bahamas, access to BTVI, and you get paid if you go to BTVI. And so you have access to free tertiary education. And back to the fact that we're a commonwealth and we're an archipelago, what the government has done, this particular administration, is ensure that, for example, if you're coming down to New Providence to study at University of Bahamas and you need help somewhere to live, you can get, you know, a stipend each month to help with the accommodation. And so there's more to be done in terms of access to housing, developing the healthcare system, environmentally getting, you know, 30 by 2030 in terms of renewable energy. You know, it's all laid out in the 2017 manifesto, and we're on a continued track to accomplish many of those goals.
Okay. So if I got a takeaway, I wanted to hear about the second teacher, by the way.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I just spoke to the second teacher, and he's at a school where, you know, it used to be St. Bede's, I think that is, off Camp Road. Is it St. Bede's? I think it used to be St. Bede's. And it's a special school, as in when teachers or educators recognize, like in second grade, third grade, that students aren't where they ought to be, they're pulled from the normal system and they're put in this school where they could get focused, intensified literacy and numeracy type training and focus and get up to speed and really kind of help them. And then they could matriculate back into the, and I use normal loosely because, you know, how do you really define normal? But they matriculate back into the regular system. And so he's there and he was telling me about how, you know, it was a very interesting conversation because he was talking about how we really need to cater more in our educational system, in his opinion, to vocational, you know, learners or experts. And he was saying how from fourth grade, you could identify that. So he used to be at another school where in fourth grade, they started introducing the kids to, you know, little carpentry, plumbing, et cetera, and persons who may not have done well at math, or they're now like, you know, trying to do the measurements. And so it was a really enriching conversation about our educational system and our commitment to students in our country.
Okay, excellent. That is an interesting story. Now, if we're taking away from this conversation, if we have a conversation, and what is the one thing you want me to take away from it about Maxine Seymour, about the FNM?
I would say that we're committed to the Bahamian people to bringing equity, equality to governance. And when I say that, I mean we're a party who wants all of these signs that are, some may use the word littered, some may say decorated. I don't know what the word preference is, but, you know, our town is pretty much painted various colors right now.
Correct.
So when those signs are all removed, the FNM is the party that is for the Bahamian people, for inclusion. You know, I'll tell you, like, my grandfather used to be in charge of the roadworks in Exuma, and he decided that he would support the UBP. You know, and I figure in a democracy, he should have a right to do that. He was told the day that the PLP won that he would never work another day in Exuma. They confiscated the keys to his truck, and they saw that he didn't work another day in Exuma. And so he had to farm. He had to, you know, run a little convenience store. My grandmother had to fish, you know, and the list goes on over the years. You know, my aunts, my mom, you know, they didn't have access to scholarships and jobs, all because they had a preference. The one thing I would say about the FNM party is that the FNM party is the one who brought you a manifesto. The FNM party is the one who, you know, really encourages, okay, open up the airwaves, let them say what they want. And trust me, they take advantage of that opportunity. And so the FNM is the one who's all about, you know, forward thinking and true democracy and, you know, access to various programs for Bahamian people, regardless of your politics. And that is why, you know, I stand by the FNM, and that is what I would want people to most remember. And that's that the FNM is an inclusive party and that we're about making sure that the playing field is leveled for everyone.
All right. Excellent. That's a good takeaway then. Thank you, Maxine Seymour, for coming through and discussing your views, your platform, and what you're about. I feel like we know you a bit better. Well, I've known you for a while, but I feel like we know you a bit better now in terms of what your goals and ambitions are in politics. And thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Mr. McCartney.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back on the other side.
Careful you are. Sometimes accidents happen. When it comes to your auto insurance coverage, we know what you need. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we provide superior customer service through a quick and efficient claims department that you can trust to get you quickly and safely back on the road again. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Many people wonder, what makes Boost Academy unique? Maybe it's our 8-to-1 student-staff ratio, the emphasis we place on student individuality, our focus on numeracy, literacy, and creating better citizens by sharpening students' critical thinking skills. One of our many talented teachers, program facilitators, and mentors. Or just maybe it is our commitment to taking full responsibility for your child's education, no hidden fees or costs. Regardless of what it is, let us help your child reach their full potential. Boost Academy is currently enrolling students of grades 4 through 12. Visit www.boostbahamas.com to apply now.
It's summertime. The temperature is rising, the beach is calling, and the bills are piling up. You need relief. Let BOB make your summer as sweet as Eleuthera's finest pineapples with the lowest consumer loan rates in the country. Consolidate debt to reduce your monthly payments, secure funds for school fees and home repairs, or save big by switching to a BOB mortgage. Sweet relief is here. Apply today at BOB, your bank of solutions. Terms and conditions apply.
At Wendy's, spicy means Wendy's spicy. Unlike the other guys, our spicy activates all your senses. For a taste of Wendy's spicy, try the new Chipotle Crunch Cheeseburger made with fresh beef or the new Chipotle Crunch Chicken Sandwich, both with delicious crispy jalapenos, Chipotle aioli, cheddar cheese sauce, and much more. Taste the Wendy's spice in every bite of irresistible Chipotle Crunch Chopped Fries too. Stop it today for the flavor you crave. Wendy's, different inside and out.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators, and the generator's back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
Jamal, you just sitting there drinking coconut water and smiling. Do you realize the children's school fees are due?
Yep.
And you know we gotta fix this roof, right?
Uh-huh.
And the house insurance is due again.
No problem.
No problem? How are we going to afford it all?
Honey, relax. I went to BOB. It's all taken care of.
Apply today for a BOB consumer loan or switch and save on your mortgage with BOB, your bank of solutions. Terms and conditions apply.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian, this government was nowhere to be seen.
Your aid is coming from the U.S. What are you getting from the Bahamian government?
Nothing at all.
Survivors questioned if help from the government would ever arrive.
As relief supplies are now finally arriving, volunteers complain about Bahamian government red tape.
At this point in time, we are on our own, and we're trying to get our government officials, please come down here and show your faces.
When they were needed most, this government was nowhere to be found.
This has been a paid political announcement by the PLP.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. We were just speaking with the FNM's candidate for Seabreeze, Maxine Seymour. And we're hoping that we also get some more woman candidates to come on. And in fact, Ms. Seymour may be able to come back again before the election. We'll speak some more with her, because it's good to have that perspective. I always argue that there should be more women in politics. Okay, so before I go any further, let me go through what the Progressive Liberal Party and the National Congress of Trade Unions and the Bahamas Trade Union Congress agreed to. All right? This says, these parties agree these goals and objectives are binding in honor. This is the draft agreement. And they tell me this is what they signed yesterday. So, these parties agree that these goals and objectives are binding in honor, and we will use our best efforts to ensure that the goals and objectives hereinafter expressed become the public policy of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas and where necessary part of the laws and regulations of the said Commonwealth. The parties recognize and accept that the participation of workers and their designated representatives through trade unions are essential to the democratic and economic process. Sees. Okay. The parties acknowledge the historic role that trade unions have played in the democracy of our Bahamas and the creation of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, and that this role supported the political struggle in which the Progressive Liberal Party played a leading role. Now, therefore, we agree to work toward the following. As a matter of public policy and where possible in statute and in regulations, formal consultations with the parties will occur before the approval process of the grant of permissions and concessions to a foreign investor. Again, y'all really signed this with the PLP? They're not going to do that. The language in itself says where possible, as a matter of public policy and where possible in statute and in regulation, formal consultations with the parties will occur before the approval process of the grant of permissions and concessions to foreign investors. That's not going to happen. Okay? That is not going to happen. The foreign investors aren't interested in waiting on unions to give their feedback on what concessions they've been granted. So that's not going to happen. Says that the Progressive Liberal Party will, in government, use its good offices to ensure the spirit and letter of the law regarding industrial agreements in the hotel and tourism sectors and any other sectors are concluded. That as a matter of fundamental principle, a Progressive Liberal Party in government will declare its unequivocal support for trade unions in the workplace, including automatic agency shop. The PLP didn't do automatic agency shop before, neither did the FNM. Maybe this next time they will. I can live with agency shop. I'm not part of any union, but I get it. It says that the parties will work with the PLP in government to amend the law and regulations where necessary and possible to do the following. What does that mean, possible? They can amend the law and regulations if they want. Yeah, y'all, this language is kind of murky here. The following. Redefine wages to include all forms of income, including tips and gratuities. Okay? I could get with that, because the PLP would essentially, if they do this, they would be doing it on our behalf. I could get with that. Ensure that foreign employers are unable to walk away from their financial obligations to workers in the case of the demise of their companies or entities. I can agree with that. Allowing for at least 16 hours of rest between shifts for each employee. Well, what if the employee doesn't want 16 hours of rest between shifts? Provisions on redundancy pay should be based on years of service. We pledge to raise the cap to 24 months. Now, in principle, I agree with that. However, I think that that's going to raise the cost of doing business. At a time when businesses are not on their full financial footing, and in the case that they do close, that's going to become problematic. Or they do have to make people redundant, that's going to become problematic. But I can support that up to 24 months, certainly 18 months. I think the way you do it is you do it incrementally, because now it's 12, I think. like you say, in the next, we're going to go to 15 months, and then the next 3 years we'll go to 18, like that. This says, review the possibility of amending Section 26(4) of the Employment Act to read, where an employer provides both a gratuity and a non-contributory pension, the employee is entitled to redundancy pay, gratuity, and the pension. Redundancy pay, gratuity, and the pension. That doesn't happen now? You could, is it either or now? Review the possibility of amending Section 29 of the Employment Act so that dismissal will be based on wages instead of basic pay, and remove the cap of 12 years and replace with of service. Again, I could get with that, but that's going to drive up the cost of doing business. At a time when you're talking about economic recovery, and businesses are going to be a critical part of that. Section 42 of the Employment Act should be amended to make agency shop automatic upon recognition as the sole bargaining agent. Okay. Section 46 and 47 of the Employment Act to include notice pay in the case of unfair dismissal. Okay. The parties agree to amend the law and regulations to strengthen the role of conciliators and to enable the rulings of the Industrial Tribunal to be enforced without delay. They should do that. I do agree with that. Right now, it is almost impossible to have a ruling of the Industrial Tribunal enforced unless you get an order through the Supreme Court, which doesn't make sense because the Industrial Tribunal should be the court that deals with labor. For all intents and purposes, it's a court. The parties agree that as a matter of policy, the heads of registered trade unions and their secretary generals or designate should be justices of the peace. How does the government manage that? How does the government require that the head of a trade union be a justice of the peace? Five, the parties agree to work toward a Cultural Heritage, Art and Entertainment Encouragement Act, as well as a National Pension Act. I agree with that. All right. Now here's where the union and I part ways. All right. The parties agree to work toward the passage of a National Redundancy Fund Act. Why do you need a National Redundancy Fund if you're demanding that people be paid redundancy pay and gratuity and uncontributory pension? Here's my problem with this idea of a national pension, because the union's idea of a pension is where the government alone pays the pension and the person does not contribute to their own pension. And I think that that has led us to a place where we are in deficit spending in order to satisfy these non-contributory pensions. You're going to say, I'm being cold, but it's a cold world out there, all right? So if we keep paying the pensions of those fully in government, then that means that other services for those who are not in government, who use their tax dollars to pay for the pensions for those in government, will not be received. So I have a problem with that. The way the union has talked about it, because they want straight up non-contributory pension for everybody. The parties agree to work to carry out the provisions of the National Development Plan. That's fine. The parties agree to work toward the passage of a National Redundancy Fund Act. Again, I don't know why you need that if you're already demanding that we change the Employment Act. The parties agree to ensure that national health insurance is fully implemented for all citizens and residents of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, including hospitalization, catastrophic care. All right. The parties agree to work toward the enactment of a livable wage. What does that mean? We agree to work toward it. The parties agree that legislation where needed ought to be enacted, along with regulations to strengthen the National Tripartite Council, including control of its own financial affairs and budget. I guess that's not unreasonable. The parties agree that the PLP in government will supply to each umbrella union a parcel of land for the building of their national headquarters. I guess if you could give the Saxons land for their headquarters, you could give it to the umbrella unions, eh? The parties agree to work toward the enactment of a comprehensive Consumer Protection Act Sounds good. The parties agreed to work on the reformation of the Public Service Commission rules to ensure more timely processing of employee applications and promotions. I can get with that. The parties agreed to designate the House of Labor an historical landmark, and the PLP and government pledges to provide funding for the restoration and maintenance of the building. I don't know about all that. You should be able to maintain your own building. The government can hardly maintain its own buildings now. What else is here? This says, the parties agree to work on the parties agree they'll work to find ways to strengthen the financial sustainability of trade unions, including their ability to enter into international support agreements. The parties agree to work on the reformation of the Public Service Commission rules to ensure more timely processing of employee applications and promotions. I read that one. Okay. The parties pledge to ensure that the provisions of the Health and Safety at Work Act are fully implemented and enforced. That's fine. The parties agree they'll work together to strengthen the present Public Defender's Office work toward a comprehensive system of legal aid. That's fine. The parties agree that the present practice of carrying labor representatives to international meetings will be continued. Okay. The parties agree to support trade union education, including supporting tuition at trade union education institutes. The parties agree that all pension boards and private major health committees shall have equal representation between employees and employers. Okay. The parties agree that the labor movement and the PLP and government should meet from time to time, but not less than quarterly, to review the progress of this memorandum and matters of mutual concern. The parties agree that the PLP will be supported by the labor movement to become the next government of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Okay, that's what you agree to. Now, you have numerous unions, including, in fact, let me actually give you the list. You have numerous unions, including the Airport, Airline, and Allied Workers Union, the Bahamas Airline Pilots Association, the Bahamas Commercial Stores and Warehouse Union, the Bahamas Financial Services Union, the Bahamas Hotel Catering and Allied Workers Union, the Bahamas Musician and Entertainers Union, the Bahamas Public Services Union, the Bahamas Union of Teachers, and the Union of Public Officers. So the BUT has about 4,000 members. The Public Service Union has, 10,000 people. All right. The Hotel Catering and Allied Workers Union, after the layoffs, probably well over 10, 15,000 people, I would imagine. So maybe not that many now since they don't have anything at Cable Beach, but still. So you went out. So this is bad for the PLP and the NCTU and the TUC, because what happens is you look like you're not clear on what's going on within the union. So I would have had to ask the guys, well, who all signing off on this so I'll know? You guys are saying you're signing on their behalf. Where are they? So the PLP should have done more due diligence with this, because now it just looks sloppy and it's messy and you're engaged in something that's messy. It's not a good look, particularly before a general election. But it looks worse on the leadership of the TUC and NCTU. We got a lot of texts. We got a caller on the line. Let's do this. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Hey, Juan. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great.
Yeah, this only shows the weakness of our current union leadership. Could you remember when that hotel on West Bay Street decided they didn't want their workers to join a union, so they fired all 600 of their workers and closed the hotel?
Sandals,
yeah. They opened back up weeks later, and the PRP was with them celebrating their grand reopening.
Yep.
And, you know, Brave Davis was one of those people there. And the union leaders was basically nowhere to be found, because last time I checked, wasn't there a court order saying that the union, those members could have joined the union? And they basically the same union leaders who are now saying they're siding with the PLP, basically sat silent. Now, if they were independent like unions should be, they could have been able to hold the government to task. And I've seen this happen time and again, that union leaders, whether PLP in or FNMN, cannot do what needs to be done for the workers, because they are beholden to either one party or the next. Like I said, this basically just shows the weakness of our current union leaders, the leadership to be precise, because they cannot hold any government accountable because they are too closely tied to them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I like to listen.
Okay. Thanks. So here's the thing, right? And you're saying to me, well, why can't the heads of the umbrella union, the umbrella unions are only exist because of the affiliated unions under the umbrella. So if they're not in agreement on something, how do you represent them as taking a position that they don't know any, they say they don't know anything about? Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. I'm great. How's it going?
Yeah. Just let me say, I see this as a benchmark for the unions to begin a conversation. I didn't see it as based on the invitation that I saw went out. The invitation was made to every single political party there is. So nothing prevents over the next few days the Free National Movement, the Coalition of Independence, the new political assembly of coalition of parties, as well as the DNA and others to go and sign the same agreement. But those who claim that the union has no power...
Well, then the agreements... I guess you're right. You know, they could sign another agreement.
And I'm saying so, then says that they all agree to the same thing. But for those who don't understand that, yes, the union may have shown some weaknesses, but one of the things that weakness is because they capitulate on the day after the election. Now, if you begin to recognize that all union members are most likely voters, and the power of the people is and shall always be greater than the collective power of the people is and shall always be greater than the select few in power. And so anything that the union wants, technically, the agreement is not literally not necessary, because if the people, who happen to be the voters, was to get together with exactly what it is they want, they can make demand on the members of the parliament individually, as well as government and opposition collectively, to get the changes they want. The problem that we do as a people, as well as organizations that want change, except for those that you see like organization, org, and others who advocate, as well as the most powerful union in the country. Do you know what the most powerful union in the country is?
Who's that?
The Chamber, Union of Businesses.
Right.
And so if they just become organized and knowing exactly what they want, the problem is the political taint in each of the leadership of the union. So if the people then come first, but again, the union also represents, supposed to be the collective ideology of the workers they want. So the power then comes right down to the bottom where it's supposed to be, where you flip the pyramid and the power belongs to the people.
Okay, thanks. I got another call, Sialan. I got to move on. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. I can't hear you very well.
You very well.
I'm fine.
This is me again. Sorry, I didn't get a chance to call. I hope I don't lose the look at this time, but I call that here. And one of the other things I...
Hello? We lost him? No. Connection is probably wonky. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
You know, this is how the union, for the last 4 years, right? Minister, chief of the country, he meets with no union. So if the next prime minister... tell a unionist, I would personally...
Minister met with every single union leader.
But don't worry with the smaller unions.
No. You said for the last 4 years, Minister didn't meet with... No, you listen to me. The last 4 years, Minister met with no unions.
Yes.
That is not true.
But I did nothing so soft. Listen, look with me. In the state, the steel union met with Bush. Met with Trump. The big unions, but I endorse you, if you bring me jobs. See, the big unions, the CS, the CFILO, the car workers, they work for the president. To get him to vote, I give him my job. I have an open door to come see you, not folks. See, Finland did it. Finland made the union member of the Senate, something like that. Finland cut a deal with the workers' union to get them the better deal. I have an open door to come see the chief, not the minister. The chief say, I will solve your problem no matter what it is. See, the union, for the last 4 years, the doctor's union has been trying. Doctor's union is still trying right now. Minister Paul has a lesson on enough of them. The minister's been bad for the union. He's been ducking and dodging. He is the chief of this country.
Okay. I can't do any more calls. I don't have time to do many more text messages. Says, here's the reason for calling this election at this time. Politics is killing us. Remove the politics. Then the country can move forward. Getting rid of the politics is a good move. I'm disappointed in the union man and what he did yesterday. I guess they don't understand that they have members from all political parties. It shows they meant not dealing with the government in good faith or for all its members. One, when the dust settles, you need to do a show on the credit scores coming soon. My bank constantly sends me default notices, but thank God I've never missed a payment. Will my ratings reflect my performance? We are going to do something. We shall. This says, great interview with the Seymour lady. It says, nice to see the nurses union to this agreement with the people in here. Nice yellow shirt. What hypocritical behavior. She was political in her motivation. You know, Madame Mancha. This is one for the last 4 years. Menace didn't have the decency to meet with the unions. But where y'all get that from, though? Do y'all just excise whatever memories y'all have? Menace called all of them to a meeting. All right? And he's also met with the heads of different unions and spoken with them, and they've said they've spoken, and many of them said they've spoken with him, not everyone. I'm just not going to lie on the man. This says, tell that man the crowdfunding from ArawakX is not to propel small business ventures. It's there to enhance the most and best potential business plans and options. It's not to fund someone who wished to open up a chicken shack. Please tell him to educate himself. It says, one, you don't get it. The unions want business people to open a business, not for profit, but to carry the lousy employees among us. No one will do that. They should open a business themselves, but they didn't wish to deal with the same people they claim to represent. All right. You guys sent a lot of messages. I can't get to them. Sorry. But it says, hi, Juan. I agree with you on the pension the union wants. The employee and the employer should contribute to that. The government already has a universal pension plan for its citizens. Yeah, and I disagree with the universal pension plan by the government. I think it's time to do something different. Okay. We got to go. That's it. Show's over. We'll be back tomorrow. Lord willing, you guys take care out there and have a great day, Bahamas.